Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fire Radio. Down. We had quite the musical discussion here before the show, didn't we, Ramos? Ramos, every day begins just to test the audio with Stairway to Heaven, which I got to be honest, I mean, I like it because I know that John Ramos is on the ones and twos when I hear it coming down in my headphones. But I also will tell you it's not my favorite Led Zeppelin song.
And it's not meant to be played for favorites. It's just meant to play to, it's a longer song.
Yes.
And it's just meant to like equal out a certain time when before the show starts. So, and Dan just said pick a song and that's the one. There's no rhyme or reason to why that particular Led Zeppelin song is played. That's all. It's not like I went, hey, we got to play Led Zeppelin Stairway to Heaven or I'm out of here. So...
Well, you can just say, like, it reminds me of being in my bedroom as a teenage boy smoking a cig and
I know it does
blowing
it.
Out the window. And
I was
pony,
5 years old when that song came
having
out.
Having a pop in a ponytail. And I know. I thought smoking at 5 years old was a little...
can you pass me the Marlboro, please?
It did give you those gravelly kind of dulcet tones to your voice.
Well, thank you.
Just in case you're wondering, Fool in the Rain is my favorite Led Zeppelin song.
Yes, that's off the Coda, right? Or no, 1980, Into the Outdoor. That's it.
Wouldn't know.
Yep.
I have a weird childhood. Like my parents, my dad was how old when they had me? Like he was 36 when he had me, but he was also kind of like an old soul. So my dad, he liked old time radio, big band music. Sinatra, he just wasn't into 70s rock, nothing. He liked Motown, and soul and R&B, like that he liked. And so there's like a whole era of music that I wasn't necessarily brought up on. Nobody listened to classic rock until my brother got to high school and he liked Rat and Scorpions and couple others that was the first time. And then my sister, when she got to college, started to like country when I went to school at Notre Dame first. And then at Oklahoma State, I got into country and I was always into hip hop and rap. So as I got older, like I actually like listening to a lot of classic rock, Creedence, which is, I was thinking about Creedence and I'll have to use this at some point in time. Creedence Clearwater Revival was not together a long time. Right, they were only together for like 2 years. Made amazing music, and I'm trying to think what the parallel to. I feel like they're the Detroit Pistons that won the NBA championship, right? Where you had like super talent, like John Fogerty's super talented, just couldn't get along with dudes, right? And like reminds me of like a Rasheed Wallace, and so but for that short period of time, like it was magical. It was CCR.
The funny thing is, you're right. He couldn't get along with his brother, which right. was Tom Fogerty.
Yes.
Which is interesting because I don't know. Is that, I mean, I think we talked.
I have twins. I have twins. They get along worse than Tom and John Fogerty. Like I'm not even. They see each other in the hallway every morning, and you know. Anyway, all right. So Jerry Jones has got some issues on his hands. This is Jerry Jones. Earlier today, when he was questioned on 105.3 The Fan in DFW about the leadership void in his team.
Does your team have a leadership void?
We're in the offensive line.
Just overall.
Seriously, where would you have a leadership void? Is it an experience void? Is it a talent void? Is it a leadership void? I'm not trying to be cute here. The answer is no. The answer is no.
I'm asking.
There's not a, well, just shut up and let me answer. No.
A little testy there. Well, shut up and let me answer it. Again, Who are those guys? Like, I think I know who those guys are. I just want to make sure because they've switched. Is that Shannon RJ? Those guys are really good guys. Okay, but I'm going to be critical of them in that again. What happens is you end up answering the trigger word. What is the trigger word there, guys? The trigger word is void. Or do you, he asks a yes, no question. Whereas, and RJ is a good, both those guys I know really well. Would they probably, the better wording would be, Jerry, what are your thoughts on the leadership of your team? If he says, well, the experience, there's lack of experience there, so you don't have experience. Like, well, is there a void there? How, or also you can, I don't like the either or, but you have to point out the fact that how much has to do with injuries? How much has to do with lack of experience? How much of it is the personalities that you have or the contracts that were given out? Right. But if you start with the what are your thoughts on the leadership of your team? You don't have to. What happens is when you make statements and there's a statement made, basically you're saying there's a leadership void. And then you're going, what do you think of the leadership void of the team? Like, well, that's you're stating your opinion. It doesn't mean that the opinion is wrong. But when you're stating your opinion, I become defensive. That's when you get home. If somebody says, why are you in a bad mood? I'm not in a bad mood. But it puts you in a bad mood because you're like, well, I'm not in a bad mood, right? You automatically become defensive. So I believe that the question screwed the whole thing up. Here's Jerry Jones when asked about his head coach.
If I were going to hire a head coach that were going to be at this stage this year and work through this for the betterment of what's in store for us for the rest of the year and for what's for us in the future, I got my man.
Okay. So, look, here's the thing with Mike McCarthy. He looks good on paper, right? I mean, this is the thing with dating, right? Looks good on paper. Dude looks really good on paper. Then you're like, something's missing. She looks really good on paper. I've never been on these dating apps, right? But the dating apps are like, oh, he's good looking. Meet him and, okay, not in a relationship. Has a job, has insurance, doesn't seem to be needy, has all their teeth, functioning teeth, right? Not like over the top political, over the top religious, all right, something's missing. Mike McCarthy is perfect on paper. Coaching experience, check. Super Bowl experience, check. Worked with a superstar quarterback, check. Worked in a high level organization, check. All right, check. Work with other successful organizations, check. Develop young players, check. You go through all these different things. Okay with working for Jerry Jones, check. That's part of it. Okay with working with our current offensive staff, Kellen Moore, who is already there, check. Checks a bunch of boxes. But like in relationships, sometimes there's just not something there. There's just not that spark there, right? Like, he's good looking, she's good looking. The conversation's fine. Maybe conversation's even good. It's just like not there. Two people don't into each other. Or at least, That's the same thing with the players just aren't into him. Isn't there a movie like that? He's just not that into you, right? That's all it is. Like, hey, Jerry. They're just not into him. Sorry. Like, Jason Garrett may not have been a great coach. He may not have been that inspiring leader, but hey, he was a quarterback with the Cowboys. He knew how to deal with you. He's a little younger, in good shape, knew how to, was apparently more relatable. It worked better. This one ain't working. You can keep going on dates. You can keep taking him to nice restaurants. But unless there's that spark, that magic, that feeling, it ain't ever going to happen. Mike McCarthy looks good on paper. Looks good on paper. Teams are much the same way. You know, something is missing there. And to me, it's a lack of emotional investment in the players. Is it because of the makeup of the players? Is it because of a leadership void? Is it because they've had massive injuries in their offensive line, which there's some tremendous leaders there? Is it losing your leader as your quarterback? Maybe. You know, is it that Mike Nolan hadn't been a defensive coordinator in a while and his style, and he was formerly a head coach, but he wasn't, and the defenses now have changed and evolved, and he's a little bit behind the curve. All of that, fine. But the fact is that DK Metcalf has shown more effort on one play on defense. DK Metcalf, by the way, is the wide receiver for the Seattle Seahawks who chased down Buda Baker, right, in what is one of the most impressive athletic and effort plays in the NFL in years. DK Metcalf has shown more effort on the defense side of the ball than the Cowboys have. And he did it in one play. Something's missing. And Jerry's defensive because he knows it and because of the way the questions are asked. Otherwise, he would have painted himself in a corner and he would have basically described what we all know to be true. Shannon and RJ are right. Like, there is a leadership void, but the leadership starts at the top. At the top. All right, coming up next in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. The World Series is tonight. Do you believe in what the Dodgers are going to try and do? That's next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. What a great jam this was, huh? This was License Ill, wasn't it?
Brass Monkey, I think so. I believe so. Not Paul's Boutique. It was License Ill, I think. Paul's Boutique had...
Vince, we're having the right conversation.
Yes, it was License Ill.
License Ill was the album.
Yes, and it was Brass Monkey was the song.
Brass Monkey is the song.
Correct.
Right? Now, if memory serves me, it's Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. If memory serves me... the Beastie Boys didn't actually like that album because they didn't play their own instruments. And then Paul's Boutique, they did play their own instruments, which isn't as widely acclaimed. But I love that song, Girls. Great song.
Yes. Paul's Boutique is a very good album.
It's a very good album, but it did not receive the acclaim that License to Ill did. Like, if you say Beastie Boys, people say License to Ill. By the way, like this is like kind of your Stairway to Heaven. My least favorite Beastie Boys song is "You Gotta Fight for Your Right to Party." Like, they have so many better songs,
but it's a commercial breakthrough song, and every band needs a commercial breakthrough song to get them going.
Right?
Yeah. I think.
Yes, I would agree. But a lot of times the commercial breakthrough song is a good song. A little cheesy, but a good song. Like, I don't think that's cheesy. I don't think it's good. I don't.
That's just an
excuse for white dudes to drink beer and go, like, to party!
Oh, yeah, man. Right?
That's what it feels like to me. I'm just keeping it real. That and we're going to play some from our new album. I miss concerts, but the song from the yet-to-be-released new album at the concert is an ultimate downer. You're like, I think I like it, but I don't know. I haven't heard it like 15 times yet.
I like to look on YouTube and try to find the very first time bands played like a great song live. And you're right. Even though it's a great song now, when they played it, people are not like they don't know it. But then it becomes like a number one hit song. And you're like, man, that's the first time they ever played it live. Like, if you would have been there, you'd have been like, I don't want to hear this song. I want to hear your hits.
I don't want to hear the song. I want to hear your hits.
That's right.
I want your hits. But anyway, so the Dodgers are throwing out Gonsolin tonight, right? All right. I mean, basically, I don't want to say this is a bullpen game, but it feels like it's going to be a bullpen game, right? Baseball has changed dramatically on the new rule in place where you have to face three batters, dramatically. And I think for the better because of it, because now like the math is totally different. You're not just looking at the chart and saying, can this lefty get a lefty out? Can this righty, can a sinker baller get a guy who struggles with the sinker ball? Instead, Yeah, I mean, this one's a hard one to say, but Gonsolin in the postseason, you know what his ERA is? 9.32. Like, what? He's starting game six and they're choosing to do so? Like, yeah. Yeah. And this is the weird thing about the Dodgers. Like, remember, they've had Rich Hill start in playoff games who couldn't make it out of like the third inning, and he also had blister problems, as you know, Walker Buehler has blister problems as well. But like the two things that have changed about baseball that I love, but I'm intrigued by are, one, the idea of the opener instead of a starter. And two, and this is a big one, is the using the closer in a high leverage situation, which the Rays have done maybe in the fifth inning or maybe in the sixth inning. Right? Because the old adage in basketball is, well, you can't win a game in the first half, but you can damn sure lose it. You can't win a game in the sixth inning, but you can damn sure lose it, which I agree with. And what happens is, you know, ostrich baseball guy goes, why are you using analytics? When, you know, okay, so if you're not going to go there, what are your other choices that you could move Walker Buehler up? Okay, and then who starts game seven? Who starts game seven? So I like it, but I think, you know, like, look, basketball has changed. Football has changed. Baseball damn sure has changed. And the two biggest changes you will see tonight. One is Gonsolin starting, the idea of using an opener. And if he ain't it, we'll find somebody who is. We're not tied to him for more than three batters. That's it. I can see what you got in three batters. And the use of your closer in high leverage situations, regardless of inning. Can't wait. That game, of course, tonight on Fox, which gets underway at 5:08 p.m. on the West Coast, 8:08 p.m. on the East Coast.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Nate Bjorken joins us. He's the new head coach of the Indiana Pacers. Coach, how are you?
Very good. Very good. Thank you for having me.
What's this been like?
It's been great. It's been busy, which is what the job entails, but I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed talking to the players and texting with the players, and I'm overlooking our practice facility right now, and it's a big-time place here in Indiana. I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, to be the head coach of the pro team in the state where basketball is the sport, that's...
Yes.
There's only 30 jobs, but that's a pretty remarkable first job.
Absolutely. You're exactly right with Indiana basketball. And I know my kids are really itching to make the move and get here, and they're young, and just to be a part of everything that basketball entails in this state. You're exactly right.
Yeah, when somebody asks you Indiana or Purdue, or Butler, your answer is yes, right? That's got to be the answer. The answer is yes. Your path is really fascinating to me. You began playing college basketball at University of South Dakota, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Who was your head coach?
His name was Dave Boots.
You were in Iowa, but why South Dakota? How does somebody go like, hey, do you want to come to South Dakota to play? Where can I get a place that's colder than where I grew up?
Well, you know who my assistant coach was at South Dakota.
I do. I wanted to get to that in a second, but go ahead.
Okay, you got it. Well, I really wanted to play college basketball,
sure,
and thought I was a Division I, Division II player. I was not, but I wanted to give it my best shot, so I played there for a year. I ended up transferring out of there, but I was always fortunate to play for very good coaches in high school and college and you name it. And that just helped me kind of love the game even more and want to coach it.
What did you guys run? What do you remember about playing South Dakota? What was your offensive style?
You know what I remember about South Dakota? This is the most, I don't remember much offensively, but defensively, I just remember like running a matchup 2-3 zone. And that was kind of the first time I was experienced to that kind of defense. And that's my big memory from that year.
Huh. Well, matchup zone. I just anytime we played zone in college, I had no idea what I was not. We didn't play zone in high school. I didn't play it for my dad in AAU. I played for 1 year for John McLeod, and we ran a zone twice. We practiced the day before both times, and it was against Georgetown. It's because, like, you can't guard Allen Iverson. I was like, no, I cannot. So let's go 2-3 zone and hope he misses. So then you went, then you transferred back home, right, to Buena Vista University?
Correct, which was a Division III school there in Iowa where I played, again, for a very good coach. His name was Brian Van Haften, a very successful small college coach. And again, it just it allowed it to grow more and more. We had good teams, and it was a lot of fun.
You mentioned your assistant coach, South Dakota. That's Nick Nurse. I don't know if you know this, but I played for Nick. He was an assistant with the Oklahoma Storm. He was coaching, I think, Birmingham in England.
Yes.
And he came over, and he was our assistant. He joined us like a couple games, and Kareem was our head coach. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was our head coach, and Nick Nurse was our assistant coach.
I was hoping you were going to bring that up, man. I love that you played there. He speaks of those days and his minor league days all the time. But obviously, that was before him and I started coaching together. But I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
I was hoping you brought that up.
So you get done playing, right?
Yep.
And in your mind at the time, you're like, I want to be a high school coach. I want to be a college coach. What was in your mind?
Yeah, I wanted to be a head coach right away. Is what was in my mind. I enjoyed my playing days in high school and college, and that was going to be the extent of my playing days. And I wanted to coach. I wanted to run my own team. And I started as an assistant in high school, but then I was a head coach at age 23 or 24 and enjoyed every second of it.
How did you get to be with Nick again with the Iowa Energy?
Yeah, so what happened was when I transferred out of South Dakota, he then went overseas for 9 or 10 years, and I was coaching high school basketball in Iowa and in Arizona for about those 8 or 9 years as well. Then the Iowa Energy, which was a D-League expansion team, was coming to Des Moines, Iowa, and I was calling Coach Nurse and texting him, emailing him, you name it. I wanted to be a part of pro basketball. And at that time in the D-League, you only had one assistant coach that was paid, and he already had his lead assistant. But he said, if you want to come volunteer, he goes, you can come. I continued to bug him and bug him, and I showed up at his front door, and I was his volunteer assistant that first year. That was 14 years ago.
Okay, so but how do you make it work financially as a volunteer assistant?
Well, I had a little bit money saved up from my teaching and coaching days, you know, in Iowa and Arizona. So I did, and then that money went away quickly because I drove myself to the road games. I was substitute teaching to try to make a little bit of money. I even bought my own plane tickets to go to a couple road games, but it was all worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it is all worth it. Okay, from Iowa, then you go to the Dakota Wizards. You're the head coach, right? So, but this is different for you than from other people because so many times guys are assistants their whole lives and they finally get that head coaching job, but you're a head coach in the D League. Tell me, what do you remember about your first team with the Dakota Wizards?
I was excited to be a head coach again. Like you said, I'd been a high school head coach, assistant coach. I've always gone kind of back and forth of that in my career. And I just remember, you know, after we won the championship with the Iowa Energy, you know, there was some job opportunities for me to become a head coach. And the Golden State Warriors at that time owned the Dakota Wizards. And Bismarck, North Dakota had a great tradition for minor league basketball, the CBA, the D-League. So it was an honor. I was thrilled to be able to coach that team, and I still stay in touch with those players to this day. And then they moved us to Santa Cruz, California the next year, which was another awesome head coaching job in the D-League. So all of my stops, I've been very honored and thrilled to coach those teams.
Obviously, then you went to the Suns and most notably to the Raptors. What about the Raptors culture? Like, you're part of the culture, really, of the Warriors program when you were with the Santa Cruz Warriors and obviously the Wizards. And then with the Raptors, like, there's something special about an organization that can have that kind of turnover with their star players and with head coaches and still maintain the level of success. What is it about what they have in Toronto, which you're going to try and sort of replicate in Indiana?
I love that question. And that's exactly what I felt the first second I walked in here in Indianapolis. Here is in Toronto, you could feel it. the entire organization was all in. They were really starving for a championship. You know, they had had some success in the playoffs. They had some early exits in the playoffs, but they knew they were on the verge of they were wanting to do something great. And you could feel it from Masai and Bobby, Coach Nurse, and the entire organization. Everybody was all in, sticking together on the quest for a championship. And that is the same feeling. I'm telling you, there's a lot of similarities here. That is the same feeling I had here in Indiana, not only on my like Zoom interview call and my in-person interviews here in Indianapolis, but even on meeting people and the feel around the practice facility, you know, where I am right now, there's just a great sense of togetherness and wanting to get after it.
When you had your Zoom call with the Pacers, what was your background? Did you go with the beach background, or did you go with the El Natural background?
I kind of just go with the plain wall background, so I keep it very simple.
Very, very, very simple. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but KP, Kevin Pritchard, who's, you know, your boss, president of basketball operations, you know, he was the head coach in the ABA 2000, right? Like, you want to talk, and I don't know if you know that they had a cool rule in that league. It helped me score points, and here's what it was. If you got a steal from a bat in the backcourt or a pass that started in the backcourt, you got an extra point, and the scoreboard would light up. So if you got a steal, you come down, you hit a three, it's 4 points. You get a layup, it's 3 points.
I love it. That's what we need to do in the NBA.
Right.
We need more of those rules. I love that.
When did you know? Like, this was a job which they opened up. They talked to a lot of people. When did you know?
Well, it felt good the whole way. I mean, it was a month long process, and I didn't know until day 29, day 30. I mean, really, it was, I had a lot of time in between things. Like, for example, I told you about that Zoom call. It was about an hour and 15 minutes, hour and 20 minutes. Then there was about 9 or 10 days in between my in-person interview.
Wait, can I interrupt real quick before you get to that? When you got done with the Zoom call, like, I'm sure your wife came in, how'd it go? Right. And like, how did you actually literally think it went?
I thought it went great. And here's what happened. So I loved it that you asked that. I shut my computer down, closed my computer, and I just had some notes kind of next to me, just a few like bullet points of just things I wanted to make sure that I said, you know, and I said everything how I wanted to say. And I thought it had a great flow. Like, you talk about Kevin Pritchard and coaching it, and Chad Buchanan and Kelly Crossoff, they've all, you know, coached it and played it, and it was a nice basketball flow or rhythm to the call. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I did. I shut my computer down, and I said, man, it felt great. And then sure enough, about 2 or 3 hours later, that same day, they called me and said, we want to bring you into to Indianapolis.
Okay, so now the big question is the roster, right? Now, you've worked with T.J. Warren before, going back to the Phoenix days, and obviously he's like a walking bucket. That guy can score. I think everybody, if healthy, loves Malcolm Brogdon. The big question is Victor Oladipo coming back off a really tough injury, kind of an up-and-down reentry to the NBA. What is your sense of what roster you're going to be presented with?
The roster that I have, and you named it right there. I love the makeup of this team. You know, like, this team's ready. They've been in the playoffs. They've won a lot of regular season games. They are ready to make the next move. That's why I compare it to that first year with the Toronto Raptors there a little bit. But it's a smart group of players. They have that experience, and they're just ready to, you know, take it up a notch. And they're all ready to go. I've spoken to them all. I'm going to go see them all. And they are. I like the sound of them. I enjoyed coaching against them, and I'm very much going to enjoy coaching them here in Indiana.
Okay. So what did you guys find a house? You still house hunting? Where are you in the house? Look.
No, I haven't gotten that far yet. So I'm just here about a block away from the arena and the practice facility, which is great for me. I've been spending my time here just like what you said with the players and the staff and just getting ready to go here first off.
Okay. I just didn't, you know, like, so like, is there anything in your refrigerator at all? Like, you have like one of those executive apartments and there's coffee, or do you have the coffee? Is there anything in that fridge?
You know exactly where there is one bottle of water in that fridge, and it might be like half drank. So it's one bottle of water.
Have you had that moment yet to where you walk around, you're like, okay, my first head coaching job was in Iowa in high school. I was then in Arizona in high school. I was an unpaid assistant for the Iowa Energy. Now I'm the head coach of the Indiana Pacers. Have you had that moment yet?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm honored and proud to coach this team. And like you said, all those stops I had along the way, I really tried to coach like everything I possibly could, you know, summer league and D league and tryouts and just anything that, you know, I could get my hands on to coach. And that's where Nick Nurse was so great to me. So you go back to when I was his volunteer assistant 14 years ago, he gave me a ton of responsibility from day one. And he's so great with allowing his players to grow. He does the same thing with his coaching staff, and he did. He really gave me a ton of opportunity. And this is something that I've wanted for a long time. And now, to me, this is just the beginning.
All right, here's the biggest question. Coaching in the NBA, are X and O's important? Sure. Defensive rotations important? Absolutely. But the big thing is you got to get the guys to buy in, right? To buy into mm-hmm. what you say, what you believe in. You know, if they don't do that, it doesn't work. How do you do that as a guy who, like, you're by all accounts, you're a delightful human being, but you didn't play in the NBA, right? You haven't coached before in the NBA, so you've been an assistant on a championship team. How do you do that? How do you get guys to buy into what you want them to do?
Yep, you have to earn their trust. And like, the number one thing about that, though, is they want to know how you're going to make them a better player. And they should know that. They should question that. How am I going to make you better? And then in part, it just makes our whole team better. But you have to know how to manage energy. You have to be prepared. But you're right. I'd say, you know, it's 20% of it is the X's and O's, like you said. 80% of it is knowing that they can trust you and you care about them and you care about what's happening in their lives and you want to be there for them. But you earn that trust and you get that confidence, and then the sky's the limit on that.
What does it say about the NBA that you had two guys coaching in the NBA Finals who, you know, their path different than yours, but similar in that, you know, grinders, right? Both started kind of in the video room, mm-hmm. but, you know, both started low end of the totem pole and end up in the finals in Frank Vogel and Eric Spoelstra. What does that say about the job?
It means a lot. This is a very, very good job. There's 30 of them in the NBA, like you mentioned, and there's so many great coaches out there, and you got to work extremely hard to get into these positions. So you're exactly right. It's a grind. It's the amount of work that you put in, and it's nonstop. Right. It is constant. Readiness. So I've enjoyed it, and like I said, I'm very honored to be able to coach against the coach in this league.
Last
good one.
Last and most important thing: why is it called Storm Lake? Are there always storms coming off the Storm Lake? Your hometown, where you went to college as well. Why is it like? Is this just? I mean, like, is it the abyss? Like, what is going on in the lake that it's Storm Lake?
There's a beautiful lake there. A beautiful lake called Storm Lake. It's about, oh, I don't know, 11 feet deep in the deepest point, but it's it's a great lake, and maybe it was. Maybe a long time ago, the storms and a ton of rain started that, right. But it
that's,
is.
That's a non-answer.
It's a nice little town of 10,000.
Nice little town of 10,000. Who knew that Iowa, I thought Iowa produced, you know, cornfields, baseball, you know, baseball stories, and of course, wrestlers. I didn't know it was such a wellspring for coaching talent, but apparently it is. Nate, we wish you nothing but success. Enjoy this short-lived offseason. Congrats on getting the job, and thanks so much for spending time with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation, so thank you very much.
Pleasure's mine. Nate Bjorken joined us, the head coach of the Indiana Pacers. Amazing story, right? You start out as a high school coach. You're like, all right, I'll pay my own way to go to D-League games. How bad do you want it? How bad do you want it? Coming up next, Nick Wright thinks Bill Belichick didn't make a mistake letting Tom Brady go. We'll discuss that next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Every day at this time, we like to play for you a portion of a previous show on Fox Sports Radio, Fox Sports 1. We call it...
crossing.
When a train hits a vehicle at a railway crossing, the results are often deadly. Be cautious at crossings and the signals you're going to, and be tempted to try and sneak across the tracks even if you don't see a train stop. Trains can't, paid for by NHTSA. This was Nick Wright on First Things First earlier today talking about Bill Belichick's decision to let Tom Brady go.
Did Belichick make a mistake in year 21? And I'm here to tell you no. Because right now, we are evaluating Tom Brady through the prism of his stock has not been higher at any point this season or honestly in the last 2 or 3 years. And Cam, whose stock is at its low point of the year. So right now, it obviously looks like a mistake. What Belichick knew, Wilds, was that with or without, and this is the key, with or without Tom Brady, the New England Patriots in 2020 could not win a Super Bowl. So he wanted to turn the page and figure out, do we have our quarterback in-house or do we need to go get one? They found out it wasn't Stidham. Now they're going to find out if it's Cam or not moving forward over the next 9 weeks of the season.
So much there.
But with or without Tom, the Patriots were capping out at the AFC East title. So, no, I don't think Belichick made a mistake, and I don't think by the end of the season it'll look like a mistake.
I agree with most of what Nick is saying, but it's also, this is really, really important. It wasn't Bill Belichick's choice. It just wasn't. And I have secondhand knowledge from speaking to two teams that negotiated with Tom Brady. Okay? And that the sense they got was he wasn't going back anyway. It didn't matter. Now, could they have offered him the moon, the stars, and the sun? I guess. But again, he would have been signing his own death warrant because they wouldn't be able to even put together the team that they have. They are capped out. This is a bridge year. This is a gap year. And, you know, they tried to see what they could get. They tried on the quarterback market what they've tried on the open market for years, which is can we dumpster dive on somebody who can get us by? And they've been great at it. Quarterback is just different. I don't think Cam's good enough. I think Cam knows he hasn't been playing well enough, regardless of who's around him, but I don't necessarily know if that's a product that of Cam having a bad game or two or Cam just not being efficient enough for 2020 quarterback play. But in terms of Tom Brady, I don't believe it was truthfully a choice that Bill Belichick made.
What does the Fox say?
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Interesting stat that Darren Revelle tweeted about sprinters. All-time great sprinters. I want to get to that. That'll be interesting. But coming up next on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio, Sean McVay is impressive. I'll show you why.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.